Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this very special edition of our program. Today, we are beginning an in-depth, very, very comprehensive special investigative report on vaccines, a second opinion. During this series, which will air once a week until it is complete, I will go through in detail with meticulous documentation to show that these are not my opinions, these are not subjective analysis being presented, rather they are based upon the finest information from peer-reviewed literature. We have assumed that vaccines are safe and effective. I will address that issue today. Why should we question our assumptions? The effects of specific vaccines, such as diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus vaccines, the polio vaccines, chickenpox, the flu, hepatitis B, measles, mumps, rubella, Hib, smallpox, rotavirus, and pneumococcal vaccines, recombinant vaccines, and the lessons of history. Then I'll explore the provocation diseases such as allergy, crib death, which is also sudden infant death syndrome, diabetes, AIDS, immunosuppression, autoimmune disease, new diseases, polio, and social violence and behavioral neurological disorders. Then I will follow up with activists speaking out on the dangers of vaccines, especially the pertussis vaccines, and the problems with temporary immunity and benefits of childhood disease, vaccine experimentation on vulnerable populations, the easy measles vaccine fiasco, what the future may hold, and pet vaccines. I'll then finalize the series with economic, political, and legal issues, the right to refuse vaccine as population control, and then holistic health and freedom of choice perspectives. I will make all of my endnotes, references, and appendix of scientific peer review studies available to everyone in this audience, and there are thousands. Let's begin. According to the Los Angeles Times, April 17th, year 2000, an article by Henry Waxman. Henry Waxman is the representative to the United States Congress, a Democrat from Los Angeles. He is the senior Democrat on the House Government Reform Committee and was chairperson of the Health and Environmental Subcommittee from 1979 to 1994. In part, he wrote the following. First, do no harm. That's the Hippocratic Oath that doctors swear to uphold. And it's the rule the congressional committees should follow as well. Representative Dan Burton, Republican of Indiana, the chairman of the House Government Reform Committee, held a hearing this month to publicize his conviction that childhood vaccines cause autism. We heard heart-rending testimony from parents of autistic children who sincerely believe that vaccines cause their children's condition. And a few hand-picked researchers lent a scientific veneer by testifying that they believe vaccines may cause autism. This is the kind of news that can alarm millions of families. That's why it's essential that parents know that the American Medical Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and virtually every medical expert around the world have researched and reached a different conclusion. The scientific evidence does not support a causal or causal association between vaccinations and autism. Disregarding this evidence or overstating the dangers of childhood immunization runs the risk of needlessly scaring parents from vaccinating their children. Failing to immunize our children exposes them to risk of serious illness, disability, and death. Every year, 2.5 million children die and 750,000 are crippled worldwide from childhood diseases. Once common and now rare in our country, rubella causes deafness, blindness, mental retardation. Measles, mistakenly viewed by some as an innocuous childhood illness, cause 11,000 hospitalizations and 120 deaths in our country during the 1989-91 epidemic. Today, a measles epidemic in Afghanistan has killed as many as 900 people, most of them children. The dangers of vaccine autism scare are real. In 1998, British surgeon Andrew Wakefield published a preliminary report alleging that autism in 12 children was associated with the measles, rubella, mumps vaccine. The resulting hysteria quickly drove measles immunization rates in Britain below the level experts say is necessary to avoid an epidemic. In Ireland, the health officials report that a similar drop in MMR vaccinations has caused a more than tenfold increase in reported measles cases since last year. As one Irish official noted, quote, the end result will be that an epidemic of measles may come back unnecessarily and some children will suffer permanent damage or even die, unquote. So that is his particular feelings. I wanted to offer you this because this does represent the vast majority of mainstream clinicians, scientists, and public health advocates. But that does not mean that that should be accepted without challenge, and it does not also mean that they're correct. Hence, I would like to present a counterpoint to offer you then what amounts to a second opinion. And I will recite the literature, and I will not use opinion or innuendo, as they have done, because they do not cite actual studies. And to say that there is no association whatsoever between autism and vaccine, and that all the patients and all the parents of those patients, those children, simply were delusional, and that there was no cause and effect, is to once again undermine the importance of what the parent has seen in their children. For more than 100 years, two basic assumptions have been put forth by public health officials. One is that vaccines are safe. The second is that vaccines are effective for the conditions for which they're given. The public and our legislators have, by and large, accepted these assumptions as true. And as a result, it is now compulsory in many states that children have as many as 33 different inoculations before entering school, with some of these given as early as the first few weeks of life. We've been told that the end of smallpox and polio and measles as serious health threats is due to mass inoculation programs. And again, we have accepted the official dogma unquestioningly. But as we shall see, this is not exactly the truth. What's more, a disturbing reality that has generally been unrecognized is the ever-growing number of individuals suffering adverse reactions to vaccinations. These individuals are predominantly infants and children, and the problems they've incurred as a result of vaccination go way beyond sore arms or a transitory fever. Such conditions as autism, attention deficit disorder, minimal brain dysfunction, and other biochemical and neurological abnormalities have been more than casually linked to the effects of vaccination, irrespective of what Congressman Waxman would have us believe. And I might mention in passing that I would suggest that Mr. Waxman or any other public health official who uses the power of their position of public trust to suggest that the AMA should be used as the balance or the gold standard of credibility and honesty and integrity may do well to look at the fact that the AMA was found guilty of restraint of trade and violating the Sherman Antitrust Act by stopping alternative therapies from having any acceptance within medical curriculum, insurance coverage, or media acceptance. They conducted a covert 20-year activity group called the Special Committee. And the Special Committee, Department of Investigations, under two individuals, one named Throckmorton, the other Taylor, were responsible for making sure that alternative therapies such as chiropractic were never given the scientific and healing standard of acceptance that has been awarded other healing modalities. The AMA was found guilty. That guilt was upheld by the Supreme Court. The other 11 major medical organizations, two of which he alluded to, were also found guilty. So when he talks about these organizations, does he also take the time and effort to review their background to see that they have had multiple infractions of the law, they've been found guilty, their guilt has been upheld, and as far as the Center for Disease Control is using it as a gold standard of scientific ethics, is this the same Center for Disease Control that allowed over 598 itinerant and black farmers in the southern part of the United States to go for 40 years with an easily treatable disease known as syphilis and watch it go to its advanced tertiary stages where it was easily spread by handshakes and kisses as well as intercourse, and therefore contributing to the mass epidemic of syphilis in the African-American population from those areas, without ever once trying to treat these individuals or cure them. They were human guinea pigs. Is this the same Center for Disease Control that decided that it was perfectly acceptable ethically to test a highly toxic, in fact, actually lethal, as it turned out, vaccine, experimental vaccine, on Haitian ghetto children, where no one would know and no one would care, except, of course, the parents of those children, and East Los Angeles black and Latino children? Is this the same CDC? If it is, and if this is the same AMA, then I might suggest that in the future, before the media accept, including the Los Angeles Times, such blatant statements as given by this Representative Waxman, that they may do a little historical checking to maintain some sense of objectivity. When we're told that the end of smallpox and polio and measles as serious health threats is due to our inoculation programs, and we do not question it, we leave ourselves open. What's more, a disturbing reality that has generally been unrecognized in this ever-growing number of individuals suffering the adverse reactions. Now, from my research, I have found that these conditions run the gamut. Yet because of underreporting, and I mean gross underreporting of these troubling statistics and their links, a full picture of the effects of vaccination has not emerged. And the problem of underreporting is a deep-seated one, because not only are the news media not playing up what has already been learned, but doctors are not being encouraged to report possible adverse reactions, slowing additional learning. Couple these problems with the official line that for the greater good of the majority, a minority must accept negative consequences, and we have a situation which nobody is really looking for the truth. This investigation is an attempt to do that. It has required over 6 years of in-depth analysis, a review of thousands upon thousands of scientific articles, and I'm not personally taking positions on individual vaccines, but I am rather presenting information based upon hard science. The references will speak for themselves, and it is up to you to do additional reading. At least you'll have the resources to do that from. For people challenging mandatory vaccination practices and policies, the reference section that I'll be presenting will be particularly useful. For people seeking legal advice, their attorneys may not be up on the lulls in individual states. I have presented within this report, and you'll have it made available during it, a comprehensive legal review of what your legal rights are when it comes to vaccinations. It is interesting for me to note that the situation with vaccination is analogous to that with chemotherapy. Both are presented to the public as efficacious and safe, when in reality, with few exceptions for each, they are neither. In both cases, then, personal decision-making requires extensive research for responsible individuals. Now, why do we assume vaccines are safe and effective? We are repeatedly told that vaccines are safe, vital to our well-being, and necessary for the prevention of many diseases. Most of us take it for granted that not being vaccinated endangers our health and safety. In a worst-case scenario, we envision worldwide plagues, as he's saying, epidemics, and even extinction. Our faith in vaccination is so strong that we think of them as panaceas and look to science to develop new ones for every known affliction, from the common cold to AIDS. Here I want to take a close look at our assumptions and ask, are we seeing the full picture? Jamie Murphy, author of What Every Parent Should Know About Immunization, explains society's general acceptance of vaccinations as due, in large part, to state laws that dictate children must receive vaccinations before they can attend school. Murphy elaborates on the history of these requirements. Quote, right now, all 50 states have vaccination statutes that require immunization before a child is allowed to attend school. But it wasn't always that way. In 1905, to give an example, only 11 states had compulsory laws. In other states, it was optional. And in the early 1920s, there were 4 states, Utah, North Dakota, Minnesota, and Arizona, that had explicit statutory provisions against compulsory vaccination. Over the years, unfortunately, all the states have made vaccines compulsory, unquote. Murphy feels that one of the major mistakes that was made, and that is repeatedly made, is that politicians who are generally encouraged by lobbyists to believe whatever the drug companies are suggesting were convinced without proper investigation that vaccines were the only way of preventing disease. This gave credence to the idea that science and medicine should dominate all public policy. Barbara Lowe Fisher, co-founder and president of the National Vaccine Information Center in Vienna, Virginia, reminds us that people tend to trust the law and because they believe it's in their best interest. Those who feel otherwise are given a difficult time. She said, quote, part of the problem is that in 1905, a Supreme Court decision, Jacobson versus Massachusetts, set the stage for what we're experiencing right now in this country. And that is that many people don't feel they have the option to say no. Parents who do are being charged with child medical neglect and child abuse. The Clinton administration has now linked entitlement programs to vaccination status, which means that a poor family dependent upon federal assistance will not get food money, medical care, and other entitlements if they cannot show proof that their children have gotten every single one of their 10 required vaccinations, unquote. Well, then the question is, why should we question our assumptions? Vaccines should not be taken on faith alone. Rather, we need to take an objective look at their risks and benefits, as well as their record of effectiveness. Vital points to consider about vaccines are the safety issues involved, how vaccines work, the questionable science behind vaccination, the natural evolution of disease, vaccine propaganda, and vaccine ingredients and manufacturing processes. First, let's look at safety issues. Significant adverse effects have been reported with every single type of vaccine. These reactions can occur soon after vaccination. Those are the short-term reactions, or several months to years later. Those are the long-term reactions. Delayed reactions are more insidious and less obvious because once you're vaccinated and you don't have a reaction for, let's say, a year, then unless you have a large-scale epidemiological study, you're not going to be able to prove that your reaction a year later was due to something that you had a year before. But these long-term reactions can result and have in permanent conditions such as epilepsy, mental retardation, learning disabilities, and immune system dysfunction. As to the short-term reactions, results of research conducted by the Institute of Medicine have shown that evidence indicates a causal and causal relationship between hepatitis B vaccine and anaphylaxis, measles vaccine, and thrombocytopenia, death resulting from anaphylaxis, and death from measles vaccine strain viral infection. Measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, and thrombocytopenia, and anaphylaxis, rubella vaccine, and acute chronic arthritis in adult women, diphtheria, tetanus toxoids, and pertussis vaccine, and acute and chronic encephalopathy, hypotonic hyporesponsive episodes and anaphylaxis. The pertussis component of DPT vaccine has been shown to cause extended periods of inconsolable crying or screaming. Tetanus toxoid contaminated vaccines and Guillain-Barré syndrome and bronchial neuritis and possible risk of death resulting from anaphylaxis. The oral polio vaccine and Guillain-Barré syndrome and death from polio vaccine strain viral infection. An unconjugated Hib vaccine and susceptibility to Hib disease. The committee could not find enough evidence to indicate either the presence or absence of a causal relationship between DPT vaccine and aseptic meningitis, Guillain-Barré syndrome, hemolytic anemia, juvenile diabetes, learning disabilities and attention deficit disorder, peripheral mononeuropathy, or thrombocytopenia, or Ebola vaccine, and some other neuropathies. And that was from the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, published in Morbidity and Mortality Weekly, September 6th. And that is just one of the references. There were others. The Journal of the American Medical Association, Volume 271, and the Journal of the American Medical Association, Volume 267. Now, one would think that before injecting children worldwide with hundreds of millions of doses of vaccines, there would be enough clinical trials performed to determine exactly what the effects of these large-scale human genetic experiments would be. Lack of funding is not the problem. Each year, more than $1 billion is appropriated by Congress to federal health agencies to develop, purchase, and promote the mass use of vaccines in the United States. The problem is that none of that money is used to fund independent vaccine researchers to investigate vaccine-related health problems. In itself, the lack of studies on the short-term and long-term effects of vaccines should raise questions in any honest investigator. In the meantime, between 1991 and 1994, 38,787 adverse events were reported to the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. Of these, 45% occurred on the day of the vaccination, 20% on the following day, and 93% within 2 weeks of vaccination. Deaths were most prevalent in children 1 to 3 months of old age, and since, as has been amply documented, only one-tenth of vaccine-induced reactions are reported to the Vaccine Adverse Reporting Event System, this number vastly underestimates the real incidence of vaccine-associated complications. Furthermore, since a link cannot be proven when the adverse event occurs a long time after the vaccination, this reporting system is not dealing with long-term complications at all. And the reference for this information is the Journal of Pediatrics, October, Volume 131. Let's look at the long-term reactions. The list of adverse events following vaccination or linked to vaccination is unfortunately much longer than the one presented by the IOM. Partially because, as I said a moment ago, long-term causality is hard to prove. There are, though, hundreds of reports documenting cases of meningitis, asthma, inflammatory bowel disease, diabetes, autism, chronic encephalopathy, multiple sclerosis, cancer, rheumatoid arthritis, among other conditions that seem to be linked to vaccines. I'll discuss each of these a little later on in the program. Why we need a right to choose is rarely discussed in any of the public health issues presented on vaccination. Most of us assume that vaccines are completely safe, even harmless. Alan Phillips, the founding director of Citizens for Healthcare and Freedom, a North Carolina nonprofit corporation dedicated to raising awareness of vaccine issues and supporting the right to choose, believes otherwise. Phillips says, quote, "I have seen information to directly contradict all of the commonly held assumptions about the safety and efficacy of vaccines. The primary one that concerns me is the assumption that vaccines are completely safe. Most medical people, if you press them on the issue, will say that nothing is completely safe. But pediatricians almost universally will imply or state outright that they are. Physicians in this country are required to give a piece of paper that alludes to the possibility of some sort of problem with vaccines. But the way the information is given is ambiguous. It makes some reference to maybe a 1 in a million chance of a child dying. That's what was on the paper that my son's pediatrician gave to my wife when we took him in for his first 2-month checkup immunization. At that point, we were completely unaware of the issue. And quoting him directly, the pediatrician stated outright, quote, that never happens, unquote. I remember that clearly in reference to the possibility that maybe 1 in a million children will die. Quote, the fact is that in this country, over 100 deaths are reported each year following vaccination. The FDA admits that 90% or more of serious vaccine adverse effects are not even reported, and independent sources raise that figure to as much as 97%. Of all adverse effects are never reported. So any pediatrician or other person who says this doesn't happen is uninformed, unquote. In addition to vaccine-induced deaths, there is the potential for any number of serious side effects. Merle Dorey, editor of the Australian publication Vaccination, the choice is yours. And president of the Australian Vaccination Network reports that, quote, for one 39-month period ending in November 1994, there were 32,000 serious adverse effects reported. If we accept this 10% figure from the FDA, that would mean that there were 320,000 children being seriously injured by vaccinations. It's unacceptable for any drug or treatment to be killing and injuring people at such a high rate. There should be alarms going off. There should be people asking more questions, unquote. By the way, apparently not everyone accepts the FDA numbers. One vaccine manufacturer, Conacot Laboratories, estimate a 50-fold underreporting of adverse events. That's 50-fold. That would be a 5,000%. Dr. Harris Coulter, an expert on the pertussis vaccine, is co-author of DPT, A Shot in the Dark, and author of Vaccination, Social Violence, and Criminality. Coulter says that while vaccines are prescribed as safe, safety is a relative term that the government cannot clearly define. Quote, they say that the vaccine is safe because only one in X number of hundreds of thousands of children gets a violent reaction. The number changes from time to time. Sometimes it's one in 100,000, sometimes one in 300,000, sometimes one in 500,000 vaccinated children. You can question if that really means safe. For the child who is damaged, that is not safe at all, unquote. Coulter brings up another important issue concerning safety. There are a variety of degrees of damage that can result from vaccines, and we shouldn't be concerned only with the most extreme. As he explains, quote, in any group of people who are exposed to a stress factor, and a vaccine would have to be called a stress factor, the reaction to the stress will vary from nothing at all to a very serious reaction, maybe even death. What the scientists who are concerned with vaccinations tend to leave out of considerations are the people in the middle. One in 100,000 is very seriously affected. They get cerebral palsy, they get mental retardation, or die. We know that all of those things happen, but what about the ones in the middle? There's a whole spectrum of varying reactions to vaccinations, and that is a factor which is simply not examined at all by the people concerned, unquote. Coulter makes the vital point that concerns about vaccine safety and efficacy are well documented in major peer-reviewed journals, such as the New England Journal of Medicine, the Journal of the American Medical Association, and the Lancet. Quote, all that information is there if you just take the trouble to look for it, unquote. And Dr. Dean Black, author of Immunization, Compulsion, or Choice, points out the government discussions of vaccine risks are recorded in the Congressional Record and attest concerning compensation to families of children who have been harmed by the procedure. Black tells us that, quote, listen carefully, Congressman Henry Waxman, who chaired the hearing, is quoted as saying, quote, a properly manufactured vaccine has been properly administered can cause a terrible adverse reaction, an admitted scientific fact that children who will be victims rather than beneficiaries cannot be predicted, unquote. By the way, that's the same Henry Waxman who later on wrote the article I opened my program with today. What an interesting juxtaposition. All one has to do with most politicians is track back to their earlier statements, and that was in the Congressional Record. Quote, the Congressional Record goes on to justify mass immunization practices by comparing children to soldiers who must at times sacrifice themselves for their country. As a nation will require that all children be immunized so that most children will be healthy, today the subcommittee will consider what society owes to those who are hurt, to children injured in the line of public health. The International Association of Biological Standards is the association which sets the expected risk-benefit ratio that should allow vaccines to be used. What is this standard? How beneficial must it be relative to the risk to be able to be used? What the International Association of Biological Standards says about vaccines in its manual is this, quote, a relatively small number of damaged persons due to inoculation is first considered the lesser of two evils. So we have an admission of damaged people who Waxman says have been injured in the line of public health, and about who the International Association of Biological Standards says, quote, the subject affected by an inoculation has, without doubt, made a specific sacrifice in the interest of the general public, unquote. Well, if I am a parent whose child has been injured in the line of public health, my individual child may be dead. As far as the government is concerned, that's just a risk I have to take. My child must be willing to die in the service of the general public. Thus, Dr. Black brings up a troubling assumption behind vaccination programs. That is the right for a few children to be sacrificed for the good of many. The question of that, of course, arises up, what if a child's parents don't agree with that? What if a child doesn't? We're looking at a philosophical assumption that has never been dealt with in an open way in this country, and maybe it's time for some public discussion of the issue. Another troubling area of concern is this. If vaccines are as safe and effective as medical science says, then why are doctors not lining up for the shots? After all, doctors are exposed to infected patients every day. In fact, physicians belong to the highest risk group category and are urged to accept vaccinations because of their continued exposure to infectious disease. Despite this recommendation, it is well known and well documented that many doctors refuse to vaccinate themselves and their families. In the February 20th, 1981 issue of the Journal of the American Medical Association, an article entitled, quote, Rubella Vaccine in Susceptible Hospital Employees, Poor Physician Participation, unquote, reports that the lowest vaccination rate among medical personnel for the German measles vaccine occurred among obstetrician gynecologists, and the next lowest group occurred among pediatricians. The authors conclude, quote, the fear of unforeseen vaccination reactions was the main reason for the low uptake of rate of physician to be vaccinated, unquote. I'm Gary Knoll, and that brings us up to halfway mark in today's program. We'll take a station identification, and we will return. Please stay with us.
And good afternoon, once again, everyone. You are tuned to WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM. Just to give a bit of an update before we go into the actual business of raising funds for this radio station, I misspoke at the top of the hour and said that we, Natural Living, that is, would be on until 2 o'clock. Well, in fact, Natural Living will conclude at 1 p.m. this afternoon, and there will be a five-hour special with Armand DeMille and The Positive Mind at that time. And so we want to bring that to your attention. And joining me in Master Control is Matthew Finch, as always. And good afternoon, Matthew.
Well, good afternoon. And obviously, we have to move rather quickly this afternoon. Our pledge line, folks know, this is day number two of our autumn fundraising drive, a day that is seeing some startling footage coming from the other side of the world. And, of course, there will be coverage of that as we approach 6 p.m. tonight. Gary Knoll is on with Natural Living. Tomorrow he'll be back for
Matthew,
full.
Hi, Michael.
Gary. A full good 2 hours. And we want to fit in as much as we can. What we were speaking about yesterday is the brand new book, Starred Review, which is no small shakes in Publishers Weekly. The new book from Gary Knoll is called The Food Mood Body Connection, Nutrition-Based and Environmental Approaches to Mental Health and Physical Well-Being. That book is brand new, has not been offered before. Most people have never even laid eyes on it, but we have copies here, and we have copies to share with our listeners.
Those I guess just fresh off the press, the publisher sent the very first copies to WBAI.
Well, it is available to you, those of you who can make a pledge of support to non-commercial, non-influenced, listener-sponsored radio, which is why we can approach, especially in the area of health and health care, these issues in the way that we do, without those eyes looking over the shoulder. We are more free than any other outlet, really, to talk about these issues at depth and from multiple angles. If you want to support that kind of information coming to you every single day, beginning at 12 noon, you can make your call, pledge whatever amount you can spare to become our sponsors. No, Johnson & Johnson is not our sponsor. But you can be, and all you have to do is call us, as that first caller has it, 212 212- 209-2950. We can take your credit cards if that's easier for you. Visa, MasterCard, American Express. And we have these really wonderful packages. Of course, basic membership, $50. We love the sound of that. Also, if you make a $75 pledge, we have our new or recently added full-size canvas tote bag from WBAI, as well as shirts, T-shirts, and mugs, all bearing one or another variant on the current WBAI logo. But if you can go higher, there are a number of things that Gary has put together and allowed us to offer you. This book, Food, Mood, Body, Connection, is available to you with our thanks for those of you who can make the extra pledge of $125. There's also a video. This is a filmed lecture delivered just very recently called De-Stressing Your Life, 30 Steps to De-Stressing Your Life. It's a brand new two-hour filmed lecture and demonstration from Gary Null. That is available to you, those of you who can make a pledge of $100 with our thanks, and those of you who can go all the way and make a pledge of $200, you get both that book and that video. We've had a wonderful showing this morning. We have wonderful people in the tally room who are standing by, and they're ready to take your calls.
And we really did. We had a wonderful showing yesterday for the first day of our fundraising
$10,000.
Drive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there isn't anyone out there in the audience right now that couldn't benefit from particularly the video, but certainly the book as well, De-Stressing Your Life, 30 Steps to De-Stressing Your Life. Anyone that cannot benefit from this.
Let me tell you how strong that video is. Just a week and a half ago, at the PBS National Convention out in California, I sent out Andre and some members of my staff to present five new programs for PBS for their December and March fundraise in June. And you have to have the fully finished product to show them. You can't just take them an outline or a kit. They want to see the actual film. So we had to make up 1,200 films and send it to them, and then we had to be there with a suite and present the films. Well, what was of interest, there were thousands of people with their documentaries and films and special programs there, and they only take like 15 or 16 new shows. And they generally start with the big musicals, you know, like Doo-Wop 2 and the new three tenors and all that. And shows like the ones I do generally are given very little weight in the schedule, even though I've been the largest single individual fundraiser in PBS history. And my shows have never, I've never had a bomb. Everyone's been a hit. But still, you have to start all over again as if you didn't even exist, have never made him a dollar, and, you know, say, here's what we have now. Well, the one program that just jumped out at him, that we got so much positive feedback, that it's loaded in. In fact, the good news is that more people in PBS land took my new special that has the premium, is the 30 Steps to De-Stress Your Life, that there are more cities than I can go to. I mean, I'd be traveling for the next 3 months just hitting all the PBS stations. Now, I am setting aside 1 month in the month of December to do that, but this is the one they really thought was just top of it. And so it's interesting that they looked at it, they saw it, they sat there and watched it for 2 hours and said, hands down, this is the best special I have done for PBS. The information is so good and so right on the button that you could see the people throughout the screening kind of shaking their heads and people making notes and people were writing on napkins and information coming out. So you talk about something that's going to, you know, help you in a very positive way. It's a feel-good special. I mean, it's... And it's done in a beautiful way. I have we build a special set. We have a gigantic audience. We have, instead of boards that I have in the past that I read off of, you know, the questions off of, it all comes up on famous quotes from Gandhi and, Muhammad and Buddha and Christ and Thoreau and Eurydicles. Throughout the whole thing, I take some of the most inspiring quotes and plus scenes of nature. So visually, it's very dramatic. And I did it in stark lighting, but the information, saying things that everybody's paying attention to, like, at the end of a day, have you done most of your work as a way of showing who you are by what you create, by what you do? And then people think for that for a moment. And then I say, what would be the difference in your stress and how you feel if instead of having to determine who you are by what you do, simply saying, You don't have to do anything to prove anything to anyone to feel good about yourself. The difference of the sense of being, and that's an Eastern philosophy, the being, I am okay. I'm not okay because of what I do, what I prove, and the responsibilities I have. I'm simply okay because I'm a special, spiritual, loving human being. And I go into this, and then the difference of how we can look at ourselves and not overreact. And what's amazing, I've been using these principles on people in our health support group, and I spoke with a group last night, and you should have... I just wish people could be there and to see the responses for the... We had a four-hour class, two classes last night, and I always start the class by asking people, what has changed? Well, stress levels have dropped. People said, gee, I'm going through a rough time, but I'm not getting angry about it. I'm not upset about it. I'm not looking to blame anyone for how I feel. That's the power. So that's all in the 30 steps to de-stressing your life. Very powerful. You're going to use it over and over and over and over again. You can't get everything out of it because it's so dense in information, watching it once or twice. I've had people say now from our health support group that we gave it to in focus groups that they had to use it 7 times before they really felt they got everything they could out of it. And so this is heavyweight stuff to change the stress in our life, because when you're stressed, you're going to disease. It's going to make everything worse. Now, here's what the book does for you. In a summary, if you get the new book, and this is exclusive to BAI, the Food, Mood, Body Connection, and PBS wanted it first, I said no. No, because I've raised millions and millions and millions of dollars for PBS. But to do that, I had to give some of these specials first to PBS, and that's why BAI didn't have this, you know, like we had drop-dead fundraisers in the past, and the last two have been very good, but not the same level. So I wanted to give BAI this so they could get the benefit of it. Well, we deal with addictions, addictive behavior. Now, I'm not talking about a needle in someone's arm. I'm talking about addictive behavior, your cravings for sugar, your cravings for coffee. You couldn't give up the meat in your diet. I had someone last night who said, oh, I can't give up the meat in my diet. So I asked the woman, I said, why not? She said, well, she said, because I'm used to it. I like the way it tastes. I said, but what about the animal it comes from? She said, well, it's just an animal. I said, does that animal have feelings? No. Animal have a spirit? No. Does that animal have a consciousness? No. Okay. Do you have a dog or cat? Yes. Would you eat your dog or cat? She said, of course not. I said, would you have any emotional bond with it? Yes. I said, well, why would you assume that a dog and a cat would have the feelings and emotions and intelligence, but a cow wouldn't? She said, well, they're different. I said, are they? And I recalled something that Charles Darwin wrote and what convinced him that he had better change the way he was dealing with animals. When Darwin was trying to understand how animals responded to the effects of their environment, they were going to do a vivisection. They were going to operate on this dog. In order to get this dog, and it was a little dog, to stand still for the operation, because remember, there was no painkiller, there was no anesthesia, they nailed the dog's 4 paws to the table. And the dog was crying and in pain and struggling, but it was a small dog. And there were 4 technicians, and they simply put nails right through its paws. And then what happened would forever change Darwin's perspective. When they had done this, the person who was going to be cutting the dog open went over to the dog, and the dog looked at the person and started licking his hand. And then he rubbed his cheek. The dog rubbed his cheek across the man's hand and licked his hand again and then looked up at him. Darwin looked down at this dog and he thought, here is a dog that's been put into pain, its paws nailed to a table, but it has the capacity to forgive and to love. And it's licking at the hands of the person that's going to kill it, trying to show that it will give it love. So the dog was giving love while it was being tortured. What human do you know could do that? So we should think about that. Visualize, capture that picture in your mind and hold it there. Of all four poles nailed to a table, no painkiller, and the dog will still look in the eyes and lick the hand of the person that's going to kill it. And then someone says, well, animals don't have a consciousness. How far the human mind will go in denial to reject any reality that does not meet its own. So what I try to do is look at the nature of addictive behavior, not just look at the addictive substance, not just look at how we feel when we crave something, whether it's smoking, coffee, sugar, cocaine, alcohol, gambling, shopping, working, or even the compulsion of it being addicted to a relationship. And I went to the real core of our being, what was missing, and I wrote about that. And I wrote about how to overcome addictive behavior through understanding core issues. And it works. There's a person in this audience that was in a health support group for a year, and the psychiatrist who was seeing this person refused to allow him to lower his medications. Well, the person finally, after 22 years being on the medication, the person, as of 1 month, has been off all medications and is completely normal, happy, healthy, and working. And I'm going to be meeting with this person and filming him for an upcoming episode of one of the PBS specials I'm doing to show how it is possible to get off the most devastating tranquilizers and regain your health. So I have a whole chapter here on overcoming depression, overcoming anxiety disorders, overcoming, yes, Alzheimer's. Your doctor will tell you it's not possible. They're not right. Eating disorders, insomnia, schizophrenia, aggression, attention deficit disorder, hyperactivity, autism, behavioral disorders, food allergies, PMS, and so many more things. And this is really cutting-edge material. I don't write fluff, and I don't write what anyone else has already written. There's no point to it. I like to take people to the next step. And I would like to think that the people listening to this program right now are growing and are not saying, well, I read one book, I don't need another. You don't take one class and graduate from school. You don't eat one meal and are satisfied for life. You don't open your eyes one morning and say, I never have to see again. Everything in life is about growing and change. And I'll keep growing and providing the tools and vehicles and that other people, if they choose, can use. And my new book, The Food, Mood, Body Connection, is certainly one of the most powerful, one of the most important. It should be in everyone's home for themselves, their family, and also for the people they care about. It's tax deductible. It's new and original material with protocols for all these conditions, because everyone listening right now knows someone who could benefit from this information. And one of the connections we have to people is to care enough about other people to share information that, if they choose, could very probably help them end a lot of their suffering. So call now and get the Food, Mood, Body Connection, and which is 500 pages and very well referenced and resourced, and also at the same time, the very, very, very dynamic. I mean, everybody will benefit from it. And I've tested it in six groups of over 200 people to get their reactions to it. The 30 steps to de-stressing your health, 30 steps to totally getting rid of the stress in your life or your negative reactions to it. And I mean, there's no one I know who couldn't benefit from that. And so give a call now to the station for either or both of these. They're tax deductible. They support the station, and they support you. And we'll continue to do so over and over again. Fellas?
All right, Gary, and it's coming up towards 1 o'clock. That book, The Food, Mood, Body Connection, is available to you as our thanks for those of you who can make a pledge of $125 to WBAI to keep this station healthy and to keep yourself healthy. As Gary said, there is original information here. If it has been written about before, if it has been covered before, if the modalities have been presented before, there's no reason for him to write these books. So this is new stuff. This is a brand new book, in fact, and it's available to you with our thanks for those of you who can call us right now at 212-209-2950. Your pledge of $125 will get you first in line to receive the Food, Mood, Body Connection. Of course, you can make a pledge of any amount just to support the station, support the programming, support Gary's work and its residency at 99.5. You can also get the De-Stressing Your Life video. That is a two-hour filmed lecture with other materials included in it. That is available for just $100. The whole package, the two-hour video, plus Food, Mood, Body Connection, available to you as our thanks for $200. Six callers on the line right now. As Michael G. said, we're going in a one-hour format today. We'll be back for 2 hours tomorrow. So we really need to move this very, very quickly. Thank you for those calls. We have about 6 minutes, less than 6 minutes,
to
finish this up.
How many lines can we have calls come in on?
Well, we can have as many as, I think, about 18 people can call in. Well,
let's get all 18 lit right
and,
now.
And it looks like that is what's happening right now. Folks are calling in right now with their pledges of support to this radio station.
Michael,
and
who wouldn't want to feel better?
Absolutely.
Who wouldn't want to be?
Sure.
See, the trouble is some people are so cynical about how they feel because they've never felt better. This is a chance to feel better, to lift the blue mood. I'm going to have on the show tomorrow, I'm going to have on during our break, I'm going to have some of the people who were depressed under medical supervision on tranquilizers who today are under no medical supervision, no tranquilizers. They've been labeled cured. No longer. Well, how did that happen? That information is available to these people in this audience. The people who are anxious, the people who are fatigued, the people with candida. How many women in this audience suffer from candida? I have a whole anti-candida program in here, and I also connect candida to mood swings and to mental fog and lack of clarity. And I give the protocol step by step by step by step. Here's what you do for step one, step two, step three, step four, step five. This is the self-help book. And this, remember, when I wrote the book on women's health, it was considered definitive. When I wrote it on anti-aging and now the one on mood and behaviors of all types, and that's why I got, I was so shocked when my publisher called me and said, "You ain't going to believe this, Gary. You got the A rating." I said, "Really?" I said, "Have you ever had one?" He said, "Nope. Any of your hundreds of books you've published?" And he publishes great books. He's not a commercial publisher. And he said, "No, this is the first." That means it's considered the definitive. One of the best of the year. So this is your chance to have it. The Food, Mood, Body Connection. And it went to exclusively to WBAI. It's being right over there. And my documentary is done. And over there, you don't have to wait. You'll get these as quickly as they can get them out. And by the way, tomorrow I will continue for tomorrow's show on vaccines because I want to make sure you get enough to... So I'm going to then skip until next week. I'm only going to do 1 hour per week on that topic. But call right now. Call the station for your pledge.
You know, and I think it's so very, very important that folks do call now. They're making a statement that, in fact, that they want the premium, our extra incentives to get you to pledge to the radio station because you want this new information, this cutting-edge information. But I think really what people are saying is that they are supporting the program and the program's central location here at WBAI at 12 noon Monday through Friday. We extended during the fundraising drives. We're only going to 1 o'clock this afternoon, but we're doing a full 2 hours tomorrow. So you can join us for 2 hours of natural living with Gary Null. The Food, Mood, Body Connection for a pledge of $125. De-Stressing Your Life, the De-Stressing Your Life video for a pledge of $100. You can get them both if you would like to pledge $200. You can utilize Visa, MasterCard, or American Express. Call us now at 212 212- 209-2950. Take out a pledge to this radio station and support natural living.
And we have a very good showing right now. We have about 12 people lining up to make their pledges, again, at whatever amount. And you can use credit cards if you have them. We're coming up towards 1 o'clock. This is Listener Sponsored with a Vengeance Radio, WBAI New York at 99.5 FM. Armand DeMille will be coming along very shortly. Remember, you can continue to make your pledge. Gary will be back in a two-hour format tomorrow for Friday to finish up our first 3 days of this fundraising drive for August. Remember that if not for you, this station wouldn't even be here right now. And without the rest of you joining us over these next few weeks, you would be listening to the Phil Collins station or something, you know, or Angry Sports Radio or something like that instead of the variety and the depth of information and perspective and music.
Well, where else would they get an in-depth investigation on vaccines?
Absolutely.
First of all, who's going to take 4 years to do it?
That's, well.
All right.
I think that answers its own self, actually.
You know, did the Los Angeles Times know that Waxman contradicted himself? No, but I reported it today. So we will take the time to do the scholarship to give you the facts that you wouldn't get anywhere else and historically look at all the stories, all the specials we presented here. In time, they were shown to have been right, even though originally their value was denied by the Orthodox who had a lot to lose. So one reason you should support this station is because you're getting information you can't get anywhere else. So call this station. And by the way, I just got notice that I wasn't going to mention because I was told yesterday afternoon that we were full for my party. But this morning, I had to go on Fox Television early this morning to do a show, a debate on soy. And I said, call the people, at least call several hundred, because not everybody who calls actually comes. And a lot of people want to come. There's not going to be room. So we had 55 people, after being called, said that they weren't going to come after all, which is good because we now have 55 spaces more for people who want to join me tonight for my big dance party. The last one of this year is going to be a wonderful party. It starts at 7, goes to 11 or 11:30. And even people in our New Jersey Health Support Group, you can come afterwards. We're going to play the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s music. It's going to be wonderful. I'll be there from 7 to 9 signing my new book. I only have 100 copies, so that'll be on a first-come basis. Come to dance. Dress up. Don't wear jeans. This is New York's nicest, largest nightclub, biggest dance floor. Call 212-871. You go in, you all get the same identical vaccine. That vaccine in the young person may not compromise their immune system. Their immune system is strong enough that their body will be able to maintain homeostasis. But what about the person that's stressed and already has stress hormones that are defeating much of the immune system? That could severely compromise that person's immune system. And what about the senior citizen that already has a free fall, devastating, hitting the rocks at the bottom of the cliff immune system? That could be just enough to throw that person into a severe acute episode. And there's no one testing for that, no one doing follow-up research, no one's calling your home 6 months later saying, how are you feeling? Did you have any short or long-term after effects of the vaccine? And even if a person said, I'm not sure, they wouldn't know if their blood chemistry had been imbalanced because not all imbalances are obvious by symptoms. So you see the whole idea that everyone gets one type of vaccine and that that's all that's required, it's completely unscientific. Additionally, vaccines are less efficient than the body's own immunization processes. Vaccines, unlike childhood diseases, do not produce permanent immunity. The medical profession does not know how long vaccine immunity lasts because it's an artificial immunity. If you get measles naturally, in 99% of the cases, you have lifelong immunity. If you have German measles, you'll have lifelong immunity. The chances of getting measles twice, German measles twice, or even whooping cough twice, are so remote it's unbelievable. However, if you get a measles vaccine or DPT vaccine, it does not mean that the vaccine will prevent you from getting the disease. Nobody knows how good vaccine prevention is. But I can tell you that from the recent figures I have reviewed coming out of the government medical journals, which I read constantly, it is that at least 40 to 65% of all inoculated for disease end up with the disease, meaning measles, DBT, or tetanus occurs after a person's been vaccinated. Well, what does that say? If 65% of the kids that are given the measles vaccine get the measles, or given a whooping cough get whooping cough, then it is not protective. So we're not dealing with a natural 99 or 100% lifetime immunity. We're dealing with a superficial immunity and the complications that not only can it not be predicted who will protect and for how long, and who it will hurt and to what degree, and how soon the adverse effects will occur, shorter or later, none of that can be predicted. So where is the science? Where is the science of efficacy and safety? Because no doctor, no scientist, anywhere in the world can say, if you take this measles vaccine, you'll have 99% conferred immunity without harmful side effects. They can't say it. Their studies show it. Because time after time after time, I have seen articles where 100% of some people who are vaccinated end up with the disease for which they were vaccinated. If you're vaccinated, it means you're not supposed to get the disease. And yet they got it. Waylon James notes that people sometimes confuse the principle of vaccination with the principle of homeopathy when they are very different. One of the differences, she cites, is that mass compulsory vaccinations are based upon the mistaken notion that one size fits all. Another difference is the amount of toxins given. She says, quote, the homeopathic dose is minute. It is so small, in fact, that there is only an energy field left. Through a method called potentization, you are only left with a pattern. There is no trace of the substance. This is not true for allopathic vaccines. Also, when you're taking homeopathic treatment, you're taking just one treatment, not a whole lot of them. And further, a classical homeopath, when you're seeing them, you're never supposed to violate the body by piercing the skin. Medicine must be oral. And most important, the homeopathic remedy is holistic. It addresses the uniqueness of the patient as well as their wholeness. The patient is seen as a mental and spiritual being as well as a physical organism. In contrast, vaccines are herd treatments. You're regarded by orthodox medicine as part of a herd, like cattle, sheep, or buffalo. In his widely circulated critique of vaccines, Vaccination, Dispelling the Myths, Alan Phillips writes, quote, the clinical evidence for vaccination is their ability to stimulate antibody production in the recipient, a fact which is not disputed. What is not clear, however, is whether or not such antibody production constitutes immunity. For example, gamma globulemic children are incapable of producing antibodies, yet they recover from infectious diseases almost as quickly as other children. Natural immunization is a complex phenomenon involving many organs and systems. It cannot be fully replicated by the artificial stimulation of antibody production. Research also indicates that vaccination commits immune cells to a specific antigen involved in the vaccine, rendering them incapable of reacting to other infections. Our immunological reserve may thus actually be reduced, causing a generally overall lowered resistance, unquote. Echoing the thinking of Waylon James, Philip adds, quote, another component of immunization theory is herd immunity, which states that when people, enough of them, in a community are immunized, all are protected. There are many documented instances showing just the opposite. Fully vaccinated populations do contract diseases. With measles, this actually seems to be the direct result of high vaccination rates. A Minnesota state epidemiologist, concluded that the Hib vaccine increases the risk of illness when a study revealed that vaccinated children were 500% more likely to contract meningitis than unvaccinated children, unquote. Writing in Nexus, Philip makes the point that immunization practice assumes that all children, regardless of age and size, are virtually the same. An 8-pound, 2-month-old receives the same dosage as a 40-pound, 5-year-old. Phillips points out infants with immature, undeveloped immune systems may receive 5 or more times the dosage relative to body weight as older children.